Hello, I'm Gary Pittard, CEO of Pittard, the real estate agency Profit Consultants. I appreciate you joining me for this podcast series, Seven Keys to Profit. The audio for this program is in two parts. The program also comes with a 30-page manual, which you can download and print. I recommend that you listen to the audio while you have the manual open in front of you. I also recommend that you have plenty of note-taking materials with you. I'm going to be giving you a lot of information, and unless you have a photographic memory, much of it will be lost if you don't take notes. I've been working with real estate business owners and salespeople since 1993. Before that, I had a career in sales and sales management in another industry. In my time, I have heard every excuse from leaders and salespeople, and since 1995, I've heard no new ones. In my work as a real estate agency profit consultant, I noticed that the conversations I was having with agency owners in the 90s are the same conversations as I'm having now in the 21st century. Same conversations, different century. Agency leaders complain that they can't find good people, that they can't get their people to focus to do the winning actions that bring results. They complain that it's different in their area, or that the market is tough. When the market's booming, they complain that they can't get stock. When the market's low, they complain that the market is tough, that buyers are fussy, that they can't make sales. When are we going to stop whinging and do something about it, I ask? If we encounter the same problems year in and year out, it's time we woke up to the fact that we're not going to solve those problems using the same systems and methods that we've always used. If we want a different result, we need to try different methods, don't we? It's different methods that I intend discussing with you in this program, Seven Keys to Profit. You may find yourself thinking, this won't work. But before you dismiss anything I say, think about this. Some of the most profitable agencies in the real estate industry have Pittard as their profit consultants. Pittard agencies average 3 times more profit from their sales departments than do typical industry agencies according to the published industry averages. If you're a real estate agency principal and you need to list and sell to keep the doors open, or if you have a big team but have little control, or if you're working hard but not making much profit, Seven Keys to Profit will be a great start for you. I say start because the ideas I share with you in this program are based on Pittard's 4-day management system, the Agency Profit System. This program is a comprehensive business system for running a profitable real estate business, and there's nothing like it in the world. If you want to expand on the knowledge that I'll give you in this program, attendance at an Agency Profit System presentation is the next logical step, and one that could change your business life. I'll give you more information at the end of this program about that. Pittard works with independent agents, franchised agents, and agents in marketing groups. The offices we work with are in metropolitan areas, regional areas. Some sell expensive properties, Toorak for example. Others sell in lower priced areas. And while areas may offer different challenges at different times and in different markets, real estate is the same wherever you may be. Real estate, wherever it's sold, and let's keep it simple, requires an agent to, number one, find sellers, number two, find buyers, number three, negotiate sales. That's it. Sure, there are many functions that are built into these three, but in its simplest form, that's real estate. Agents have managed to complicate things beyond belief. A lack of systems has led to copying and recycling tired and ineffective systems, which has led to an industry where the majority struggle to make the most meagre of profits. There is a lack of systems in sales departments everywhere I look, in Australia, New Zealand, Southeast Asia, the USA and the UK, and no doubt it's no better anywhere else. It doesn't have to be this way. You can make more profit. So let's get into Seven Keys to Profit. I'll get you to open your manual at page one and we'll get started. Now, Seven Keys to Profit is a program that shows you how to create a more profitable real estate business. The aim of the program is to provide you with ideas that you can use to give you more profit and more free time. The majority of real estate agency owners face challenges that stem from flawed systems that have been copied throughout the industry, systems that are spread across the globe. Typical in the industry are these challenges: low profits being made by the real estate agency, salespeople pushing for higher commissions, high staff turnover, salespeople leaving for higher commissions elsewhere, little money to cover expenses, little money to train and develop people, rising advertising costs, discounting to win business, disruptive change, low fees, demanding property owners, gross income focus instead of profit focus, selling principals with little free time. So are you facing any of these challenges? What challenges are you facing in your business? Without systems and documented procedures, agency leaders seldom find the time to solve challenges that have dogged them from almost the day they opened their doors. Challenges such as these. How do you find listings? You need systems to ensure that marketing is consistently done in all forms, digital, print and personal, and personal means prospecting. Do your people discount fees to win business? The amount of the discount comes directly from your profit. Every discount means lower profit. Do you or your people say, you can't walk away from business? If you have to discount to win the business, you have to do it. The money discounted because of low skill and lack of a value proposition would have paid for a lot of training. Training that would have eliminated the need to discount. How do you find salespeople? Without a hiring system, you will almost certainly find yourself saying, you can't find good people. How do you train salespeople? When you pay large commission percentages to attract salespeople, there's little money left for training after all the other expenses are paid. Untrained salespeople lose business. In fact, the money they lose through incompetence is far greater than the cost of training them to be competent. Ask yourself the question, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Well, it's the egg. Likewise, what comes first, training or competence? I'll leave it to you to answer that one. How do you pay fair rewards to salespeople and not lose them to nincompoop competitors who offer higher percentages? How do you run effective sales meetings that actually lead to results and not turn into whinge fests? How do you get salespeople to set higher targets and achieve buy-in from them? Commitment to achieving targets is essential. Who sets the targets, you or your salespeople? What are the consequences in your agency when salespeople fall short of target? No consequences and the targets will not be taken seriously. Am I right in saying that your greatest business challenges all revolve around people? How do you start salespeople off so that they become productive and profitable quickly? Do you even have an induction system? What is your gross average selling fee and what percentage of each fee do you keep as profit? Not knowing this is a direct link to low profit. Ignorance of major numbers is not bliss, quite the opposite actually. What is your salespeople's real percentage of each fee? For example, if you pay commissions debited against salary to a low performing salesperson, you may be actually paying 100% of what that salesperson brings in. The technical percentage may not be the actual percentage. What is the average fee production of each of your salespeople? Every dollar below $300,000 per annum should be chalked up to the cost of incompetence and inaction. Do you as the agency principal have to list and sell? Now don't brush this off by saying, I love selling. Now you're the leader, and if you have to list and sell in order to earn income that does not attract commission by salespeople, you're working to pay the bills. In effect, your sales are subsidising a sales team that's not paying its way. A real estate business need not be a constant struggle for survival, nor one that requires the owner to work many hours for low returns. A real estate business should be a pleasure to operate. A business should provide its owner with consistently high profits and a magnificent quality of life. Now, there's five minimum success standards. Clients of the agency would willingly and without question repeat the experience they had with the agency. Now remember that repeat and referral business are the hallmarks of outstanding service. So if you're not getting a lot of repeat business, if you're not getting a lot of referral business, you need to look at the quality of service that your agency and its salespeople are offering clients. The second success standard is the agency has a team of salespeople, all of whom produce a minimum performance standard that is acceptable to the agency owner. The minimum recommended performance standard per salesperson is $300,000 in gross selling fees per year. The third success standard is the agency earns a profit that is acceptable to the agency principal. This is a profit standard that is set by the agency principal and achieved. The recommended standard is $400,000 profit per annum from the sales department without the principal having to list and sell property. The fourth success standard is the agency has a sales performance record that is consistent and predictable. And let's face it, we need consistent results from our business. We need consistent profits. From our business. We need consistency, we need predictability, and you need systems in order to make that happen. The fifth success standard is the agency earns its minimum profit level without the principal's personal sales production. Now, it doesn't matter whether these figures appear unachievable because you don't know anybody who's achieving such production and profit. Just because something hasn't been done, it doesn't mean that somebody can't do it. So please don't make excuses for yourself. If you're not getting this kind of profit level, you can if you put systems in place. I remember back in 1993, we were consulting to some agencies in Western Australia, and we were saying to them in those times that the minimum performance standard for a salesperson was 12 listings per month, 8 sales per month, and a performance standard of $200,000 in fees per annum. And we were howled down by some leaders who said, oh, look, if you get $100,000 per annum in Western Australia, you've got yourself a superstar. And we said, we don't care what the industry is doing. The industry is producing average results. A lot of people are struggling. A lot of people are not making very much profit. Okay, so let's look at the standards that we're going to set and let's train our people how to achieve those standards rather than just settling for the status quo, just settling for what the industry is typically doing. And so we started working with these agencies. And guess what? We had salespeople who were starting to produce 200,000 plus in fees per annum, 12 listings and 8 sales. And isn't it interesting that once they got to those levels, people started saying, oh yeah, but that's all right for that person. He or she is a freak. Well, they weren't freaks. What they did actually was they set goals, they trained, they practiced, they developed skill, they spoke to potential clients in high numbers, and then they got the results that they'd planned to get. But it's easy for the excuse mongers just to look at these people and just dismiss them as being freaks. So just remember, just because something has not been done, it doesn't mean that somebody can't do it. There are many factors that need to change before the 5 minimum success standards can be reached. These factors will be addressed by applying the 7 keys to profit to your business. And there's an overview of the 7 keys to profit on page 3 of your manual. For a real estate agency to be successful in the long term, it must have certain elements working in unison. And as I mentioned, that these 7 keys to profit are explained in greater detail in Pittard's agency profit system. But the first key to profit is culture. The second key is financial foundations. The third key is a cockpit. Key number 4, hiring and selection. Key number 5, training and coaching. Key number 6, results control, and key number 7 is listing flow. Now on page 5, let's look at culture. This is best described as doing the right thing, even if it's not always in your best interest at the time. Now many real estate businesses concentrate on profile, but little attention is given to the image the agency is creating in the community. Not the image of being the biggest, but the image of being the best. There can be no doubt that agency owners will do better in the long term if they focus on building a reputation instead of building a profile. And let's face it, our industry is profile obsessed. And the same applies for real estate salespeople. Culture includes such things as making the pursuit of excellence the norm for the business. High standards, targets achieved, commitment to training, client care, follow through, in other words, doing what you say you're going to do. You can easily identify companies with excellent cultures when you experience their service. Suffice to say that culture directly leads to short-term profit, long-term domination of the agency's service area, and long-term prosperity for the business if it's implemented properly. When Anita Roddick was alive, she was the founder of The Body Shop. And The Body Shop had a wonderful culture. It developed a great reputation. They were one of the first companies that ever gave their people time off to go and work in charities and to go and do work that benefited society. And this was a culture that stemmed right from Anita Roddick herself. There was another company in the United States called the Saturn Car Company. And people wrote books about Saturn's service. People bought Saturn cars and then their children bought Saturn cars. Their grandchildren bought Saturn cars. People said about Saturn that it almost had a cult following. And the way Saturn operated was it had a no-haggle policy. And what this meant was there was a ticket price on the window of every car, and that was the price that everybody paid. In other words, people who negotiated heavily did not end up getting a better deal than people who didn't know how to negotiate. What they did was ethically they treated everybody the same. It was the same price for everybody. And people love this, particularly women, who often when they bought cars had been told by friends and family, oh, you would have done better if you'd negotiated a bit harder. And so they just love the fact that you could go in there, sit down, talk to a salesperson, you weren't sold to, you knew that the price that you were paying was the same that everybody else paid for a Saturn car. But beyond that, the service at Saturn was also said to be exemplary. When you bought a Saturn car, everybody lined up as you drove out of the lot and gave you a round of applause. And when they took their cars back for service, people absolutely loved the treatment that they were given by Saturn as well. As a result of this service and as a result of this following, Saturn was very, very profitable. Now, it was a division of GM, and pretty well Saturn was left to run its own race. But over time, things started to change at Saturn, and for whatever reason, perhaps they decided to make some cost cutting. Perhaps that was inflicted on the company from above. Who knows? Perhaps somebody thought that you don't need as many people cheering when people drive out of the lot. Perhaps they decided they didn't need as many technicians in the service department. But whatever happened at Saturn, when the culture changed, so too did the service, and so too did the massive following that this company had. Today, Saturn is just another car company. You don't hear about it. And so culture can be linked to happy clients, to happy staff, and to profitability as well. And when the culture changes, a lot of that can go by the wayside. Culture is extremely important. The second key to profit is on page 7, and this is financial foundations. A business must be built on solid financial foundations. Now, there's only two ways to increase profits in any business. You can either increase sales or you can decrease expenses. Now, the big danger is that sales tend to fluctuate while expenses tend to rise and become fixed. I have over the years seen offices that are losing money on every sale. Now, if an office that's losing money on every sale decides to increase its sales, then it'll go broke faster. So there's no point trying to pursue more sales until you get your expenses under control. Now, the vital financial foundations are, you've got to know the amount of profit involved in each transaction. You need to know how much does it cost you to receive that income. You need to know the cost price of each sale, and it's wrong to say in real estate that my stock doesn't cost me anything. I'm sure you'd agree that if you had 100 listings, you would need more staff, you would do more marketing than if you only had 5 listings. So you should understand that stock does cost you. So how much is the cost price on each sale? You need to know the commissions paid to receive the sale. You need to link every expense to profit. Now, link to profit means that you examine each expense and ask, will this expense give me an increase in listings and sales or rental income? So is this expense, if I make this expense, will I get an increase in revenue? Will I get an increase in profit? Another reason to look at an expense is, will it save me money elsewhere? But that's the only reason you should spend money. That is, to bring more revenue into the company or to save another expense, a larger expense elsewhere. So link every expense to profit. We advise our leaders to examine every expense and to apply what we call the decade figure. Now, let's say you have a water cooler that's costing you $50 a month, and that doesn't seem very much. Really, $50 a month, that's not going to break the bank, is it? But you see, $50 a month is actually $600 a year. That's $6,000 in 10 years. Now I ask you the question, would you rather drink tap water and have the $6,000? Or would you rather have the filtered water? So you see, when you apply the decade figure, it makes a lot of sense. It makes you look at each expense and realize the magnitude of that expense over time. You also need to know the break-even point in the number of results. A business owner needs a control program that shows the vital points at a glance. Now let's look at results to profit. There is a vast difference between income and profit. The real estate industry is obsessed with turnover to the detriment of profit. Financial success should be measured in profit, not income. And for the sake of simplicity, success should be measured in sales and dollars above break-even point. And once a business owner knows how many listings and how many sales equals how much profit, we can then put the focus on the numbers of listings and the numbers of sales that we make, knowing that when we get the listings and make the sales, that the income will come, and if we have our expenses under control, then the profit that we expect will be made too. Now, over on page 8, attend most real estate courses and you'll hear many ways to increase your turnover. But as I've just said, turnover is not profit. It's not how much money that you bring in you should focus on. It's how much you keep of the money you bring in. That is, your profit should be your focus. To illustrate this obsession with turnover in our industry, let's just look at some typical industry standards. First of all, franchises. How do franchises get paid? They get paid 8%, sometimes more, but 8% of the gross income of the agency. So 8% of the gross income. So an agency earns a $10,000 fee. The franchise gets $800. Now, if you're on an agency that's making 10% profit, okay, that means $9,200 is left for you. Well, you're only making $920 profit out of that, and the franchise is making $800 for doing absolutely nothing. But our industry just says, oh, well, 8% doesn't seem like very much. You need to understand that 8% of the gross is very, very different to 8% of the net. So our industry pays franchises 8%, sometimes more, of the gross income. But even worse than that, franchises also often charge 8% of the rental income as well. Again, 8% of the gross walks out the door. When you think about this, as an agency principal, if you give away 8% of your gross income, leaving you with 92%, then you've got a salesperson that gets paid 50%, that now leaves you with 42%. Out of your 42%, you have all of the expenses to pay, and then what's left is your profit. Is it any wonder sometimes that it's so hard to make a profit in a real estate agency? Of course it is, when you give everyone chunks of your gross. Let's take it a step further and look at rent rolls. How are rent rolls sold? Often it's $3 per dollar of turnover. That is, the rent roll is valued at $3 for every dollar the agency earns in gross income. Now, you show me any legitimate business where it's valued at a multiple of turnover times 3. There is no other legitimate business that's valued that way. A legitimate business is valued by 1 or 2 years' profit plus stock at valuation. It is not valued as a multiple of 3 times its gross income. And yet in real estate, that's just what happens. Look at the way salespeople are paid. A salesperson gets paid 40, 50, 60, 70%, sometimes more, of every dollar they bring in. And the downside of this method of payment is that a salesperson can make one sale a month and live okay on that, even though that salesperson is not making any money for the agency that he or she works in. So it's quite often the case that a salesperson makes more money from the agency than the agency owner makes. How is this fair? How is this smart? You've got to ask yourself. And it's all because of this obsession that our industry has with turnover. You must not go down that path if you want to make more profit. You have to look at an alternate way to do business. So profit should be your focus. And business owners should know the answer to these questions. How many sales do you need to make each month just to break even? That's the number of sales, not dollars. How many sales do you need to make each month to make a profit of $400,000 per annum from your sales department only? How many listings per month do you need to make in order to get a profit of $400,000 per annum, and that's exclusive listings only? And 4, how many salespeople do you need on your team to achieve these results? Knowing these figures provides clarity to agency planning. Pittard agencies know their profit margins and they know their profit percentages. We counsel our leaders to regularly produce what we call incometers so that they're aware of how much profit they make at each sales point. An incometer is a profit calculator. So, for example, how many sales do you need just to break even? If you wanted to make a profit of $400,000 per annum at your present gross average selling fee and with your present level of remuneration for salespeople, how many sales over break-even point do you need to make each month? How many listings a month would you need to get that? How many winning salespeople would you need to have on your team to get those listings? Profit requires careful planning. You need to think not only about the amount of profit you want, but also how many listings and winning salespeople you need if you're going to earn that profit. Over on page 10, you'll see the third key to profit, and this is a cockpit. A common complaint with many leaders is that you can't get salespeople to focus on winning actions, actions that produce results. While poor selection caused through inefficient or non-existent hiring systems may be the cause, quite often potentially good performers are trained to be mediocre by their leaders. And I don't mean to offend you when I say that, because it might sound harsh, but leaders who fail to follow up with their salespeople to see that winning actions are being performed send a message to their salespeople that winning actions are optional. With so much for a leader to do, how do you find time to ascertain who is slacking off and failing to perform those actions that are crucial to salespeople's and to the agency's success? The answer is a cockpit. That is, instruments that tell you how and where your agency is going. Just as pilots have a cockpit full of instruments that tell them everything they need to know about the aircraft's performance and course, so should you. The cockpit, as explained in Pittard's Agency Profit System, is a comprehensive set of tools designed to give leaders a good grasp on the agency's and individual's performances and progression towards targets and profit goals. Without comprehensive cockpit tools, you are flying blind. Now on page 11, let's look at some cockpit tools. And there's 4 of them that I'm going to talk to you about. And you're going to need to take lots of notes because I'm going to give you some comprehensive explanations of what each of these tools are. First of all, there's the control board. Now, this is the central focal point of the entire sales department. On this board are recorded individual and agency targets and results. It's impossible to run an effective sales meeting without a control board. The control board is located in the office of the person who runs the sales team, which could be the leader or the sales manager. We call them sales controllers. The board is kept up to date and changed as soon as results are notified. The control board reflects the results of individuals and the office as a whole. Some targets and results are monthly, while others are quarterly. Now, these are the main areas of a control board. First of all, let's look at individual target and results recording. There's listings, targets and results for the current month. Now, we only record exclusive listings or auctions only. You never ever record open listings on a control board. In fact, you should not accept open listings at all. You need 10 open listings to get the same result as one exclusive. So it's just ridiculous to be taking open listings. You need to train your people on how to list exclusively. The next target group on the control board is sales, targets and results for the current month. We record a sale when we have offer and acceptance. The contract may not yet be unconditional, but by allowing a salesperson to record a sale, it encourages them to make more sales. The next target group is substantial price reductions, targets and results for the current month. Now, if you have a listing with a price on it, you must have targets for them to be reduced to saleable prices. Now, this is done by coaching sellers so that they understand the market, and never by using that disgraceful industry practice called conditioning. Now, the next target group is sides, S-I-D-E-S, sides, targets and results for the current month. Sides are a listing sold or a sale started. Now, each sale has two sides. There's a listing side and a sales side. If two people are involved in a sale, one being the listing agent and the other being the selling agent, they're awarded one side each when the contract becomes unconditional. Now, if one salesperson sells his or her own listing, then two sides are awarded to that salesperson. Sides recognise the good listers in the agency, and without good listers, the agency won't have saleable stock. The next target group is fee production, targets and results for the quarter. Now, remember, this is a quarterly target. We believe in setting numbers targets, those mentioned previously, monthly, but dollar targets are best set quarterly. Quarterly targets force consistency. If a salesperson has a good month and two bad months, their income is lower than it would be if they had three good months in a row. The trouble with monthly targets is that salespeople can be paid very well for one good month and then may not make money for the company the following month. Monthly dollar targets set up agency owners for somebody to profit from their losses. The next target group is sides, targets and results for the quarter. Tracking sides monthly and quarterly keeps management aware of any potential sales slumps. Reviews, targets and results for the month. Online reviews are becoming critically important to agencies and their salespeople. If you hear your people complaining that we're not being called in, ask them how many online reviews, Google and Facebook especially, they got this month. You ignore reviews at your peril. Next is cookings. Cookings is a section that shows what sales may be expected over the coming 72 hours. A cooking is any transaction salespeople think will turn into sales in the next 72 hours. For example, they may be conducting a second buyer inspection. Put it up as a cooking. And if it's still there 72 hours later, the leader asks questions. If your cookings are low, your sales will be too. Today's results is another section on the control board. What results the team got today? A listing, a sale, this is offer and acceptance, a side, a contract when unconditional and sides are awarded, or a substantial price reduction, this is where a property was reduced sufficiently in price to get it sold. Remember, never count price trims as a substantial price reduction. And you also run an office targets section on the control board. This is the office's targets and results for the months in listings, sales, substantial price reductions and sides. So if you want higher profit, you need results. And to get results, you must focus on them. This begins with the leader, but it's got to infect the whole team. You know, negativity can infect a team, but so too can results and focus. It can positively infect a team. Results focus is everybody's responsibility. The control board gives you results focus. Now, another cockpit component is individual target boards. Just as the agency requires focus on targets and results, so too do individual salespeople. All salespeople must have their targets and up-to-date results staring them in the face. The main areas of an individual's control board are similar to those that appear on the office's control board. The salesperson's listings, sales, substantial price reduction and sides targets and results for the month. This board also shows the salesperson's quarterly fee production, targets and results for the quarter. There are also lists the salesperson keeps on the board. First of all, listings to get. This is the listings that the salesperson is chasing and intends to get. Unconditionals due. These are contracts that have not yet gone unconditional. The salesperson follows these up to minimise cool-offs. Sizzlers. These are listings that are priced to sell. These listings are very likely to become sales, and by being aware of the agency's sizzlers, the salesperson should be doing his or her best to find likely buyers for those properties. And then there's cooking, a list of the salesperson's own listings that are cooking, meaning they're likely to turn into sales in the next 72 hours. Another important part of the individual control board for a salesperson is the salesperson's listing plan. All salespeople must follow a plan, that is, if you want them to achieve consistent results. Where are their listings going to come from? You and the salesperson have to know that. The plan shows the listing source, so for example, a for sale by owner, how many calls the salesperson will make to that listing source, and how many listings, not appointments, how many listings the salesperson expects to get from those calls. You build a plan by asking what-if questions. For example, what if I rang 300 withdrawn listings? How many listings would I get from those 300 calls? So you would write that on the board. The plan would look like this. It would show the listing source, withdrawns, the number of calls, 300, the listing target, 3, for example. You add a fourth column, which is where you record the results from each source as you get them. Inconsistent performance has at its core a lack of clear written goals and a lack of planning. Salespeople need a plan. Another important cockpit component is call reporting. Leaders often complain that they can't get their salespeople to do the actions necessary for success. The action most often complained about is the lack of prospecting. The only way to ensure that actions are being done or not done is to monitor them. Each week, salespeople must provide their leaders with a call report outlining the actions they have completed in the past week and the results that came from those actions. Now let's look at call reporting in greater depth. There is a saying, what gets inspected gets respected. Leaders who complain that they can't get their salespeople to prospect most often make two fatal errors. Number one, they don't make a set amount of prospecting calls are non-negotiable. That is, if the salesperson won't prospect, they're asked to leave. 40 potential sellers each working day should be the expectation. The second fatal error is failing to insist on weekly call reports so that the salesperson's activity can be measured. The way salespeople are paid in typical offices is the cause of leaders succumbing to these two fatal errors. With commission-only reward schemes, you have no control over the salesperson's activity because this person is self-employed. You have no control. Commission debited against retainer, debit credit, that's no better. Once a salesperson in credit, he or she is effectively on commission only, and again, you have no control. Now this causes leaders to pussyfoot with their teams, to tap dance around important issues such as prospecting that should be tabled for discussion. Another reason for this pussyfooting is that those agency leaders do not have an effective hiring system, and so they fear losing team members, as mediocre as they may be, if standards are set, if prospecting is insisted upon. Call reporting is essential if you want high levels of winning actions to be performed by your team, and if you want the results and the profit that go with this increased level of activity. So here are the main elements of a good call report. The number of people spoken with, that's prospective sellers actually spoken to, and that number has to be around 200 per week. The number of listing appointments that have been set. The number of listing appointments attended, this figure can differ from the appointment set figure as people sometimes cancel. The number of listings obtained, that's exclusives or auctions. You look at the listings target for the month. How many listings were CI, that stands for call in, that means phone in or walk in listings. You want to know who is over-dependent on walk-in or phone-in as opposed to prospecting for new business. The number of listings currently held by each salesperson. The number of listings that withdrew that week. The number of listings sold, either by the salesperson or by the salesperson's colleagues. You also want to know about buyer property inspections, how many were conducted in the past week. Now, if a salesperson shows one buyer four properties, that's four buyer property inspections. We count the number of properties shown, not the number of buyer appointments set. Expect around 16 buyer property inspections per week. The next figure you want to know is the number of sales made in the week. You also want to know the sales target for the month. You also want to know the number of substantial price reduction appointments that the salesperson attended with sellers to talk about reducing their property prices to meet the market. You also want to know the number of substantial price reductions obtained, and that is real substantial price reductions where the properties were sufficiently reduced in price to get them sold, not price trims. And you also want to know the substantial price reduction target. You also want to know the sides target and the sides result for the week. You also want to know the quarterly production dollar target and the quarterly production dollar result. You also want to know the reviews target for the month, and you also want to know the reviews received that week. Pittard member agencies have access to an online call report. Their salespeople can enter their figures from any device, phone, tablet or computer, and this updates to the leaders form guide, which I'll talk to you about next, and it updates in real time. Our leaders have access immediately to their team members' action count. But if you don't have access to such a tool, I urge you to use a paper form and to have this completed by every salesperson every week. You need to know the stats. And these statistics will help you see whether a salesperson is headed for a slump and help you stop the salesperson from entering a slump. It'll help you to stop slumps before they occur. Very, very important tool is the weekly call report. Now let's look at form guides. These tell you the form of each of your salespeople. They display your salespeople's actions, targets, results and ratios on the one table, giving you the opportunity to detect in what areas your salespeople's actions and skills may be deficient. Knowledge of the vital performance statistics is crucial to preventing performance slumps. So this tool plus call reports give the leader the data necessary to determine trends, such as the likelihood of a salesperson entering a performance slump. When you see a dip in certain numbers, prospecting being one, you know that the salesperson is headed for a slump. How brilliant to be able to stop slumps before they occur. Proactive instead of reactive. Now here are the main areas of a form guide. Most of these figures you'll get directly from the call report. These figures are all monthly. The number of listing presentations, the number of listings obtained, the present to list ratio, the average number of listings per month, the number of listings from call-in or walk-in sources, the percentage of listings that are call-in or walk-in, in other words, provided by the company, the number of listings sold, the salesperson's list-to-sell ratio, the number of listings withdrawn, the number of substantial price reduction appointments, the number of substantial price reductions obtained, the substantial price reduction appoint-to-list ratio, the number of buyer property inspections, the number of sales, the buyer property inspection to sales ratio, the average sales per month, the average sides per month, the average commission per side. These are important figures and the ratios are telling. If, for example, a salesperson has a lower point to list ratio, this tells you that either the salesperson's qualifying is poor or the listing presentation is poor or a combination of the two. Knowledge of the ratios tells you what problems need fixing. Without good stats, you truly are, as I said earlier, flying blind. Many years ago, I interviewed the late Jack Gibson. Jack was the first coach in any code to be given the title Super Coach. Jack Gibson's players loved him. They appreciated the care he showed them and the discipline he instilled in them. Jack was the first coach in any code in Australia to use statistics. Jack Gibson was an avid learner. He was an avid reader. He studied coaching. He studied leadership and he visited some of the world's most successful coaches in order to get ideas from them. He got the idea of gathering and interpreting statistics from Vince Lombardi, the coach of the Green Bay Packers. Jack's record as a coach was exemplary, and during the interview I asked him how important the statistics were to him as a coach and to the team performance as a whole. And Jack looked at me and said, if you want to help a player, you need to know where they need help. If you want to help a team, you need to know where they need help. You need to know that you're fixing the right problems. And this is what Jack said the statistics did for him. He could identify the areas where the players were weak or where the team as a whole were weak, and then they could work on improving those weaknesses and turning them into strengths. Statistics are vitally important. That brings us to the end of the first half of 7 Keys to Profit. So far, we've talked about key number one, culture, and its importance in client satisfaction, longevity of the business, repeat business, referral business, and of course, profit. We talked about financial foundations, getting the finances under control before we try to drive revenue higher. And we've talked about key number three, cockpit, and we've discussed some cockpit components that'll help keep you abreast of the individual and the agency's performance and you're tracking towards your profit goals. In part two, we'll discuss keys 4, 5, 6, and 7, beginning with hiring and selection. And I'm pretty sure that you'll see when we start talking about hiring that if we select the right people, we're going to find that the right people are much easier to lead than are the wrong people. That's where we'll pick up in part two, and I look forward to your company then.